now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Brett Oldham. Brett is a well-known alien abductee and paranormal investigator. He is known for his abduction experiences, his work with other abductees, and his EVP and spirit box work and research. Brett is the author of the acclaimed Amazon bestseller, Children of the Greys, in which he details his lifelong alien abduction experiences and his latest book, The Baby Takers. He has made several national television appearances in the United States, Canada, France, and Bulgaria, including shows on Bio Discovery, CBC Canada, History Channel, TV7 Bulgaria, and RMC Découvert in France. He has been featured on numerous internet TV and radio shows and has been interviewed by various online magazines and newspapers. Brett has contributed chapters to several other books, including books by world-renowned author Brad Steiger, among others. He has also written articles for Alternate Perceptions and Mysterious Universe magazines. As a public speaker, he has been a featured guest speaker for Nevada MUFON, Tennessee MUFON, California MUFON, Paramania, Octagon Hall, Kentucky Paranormal Study Center, Huntsville, Alabama, Fayetteville Arts Center, Tennessee, and various other ghost groups and UFO organizations. So without any further ado, Brett Oldham, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you, James. I'm glad to be here. Heard a lot about your show. I'm glad we finally get a chance to talk.
Yes, I've been looking forward to this discussion with you. Please, for the benefit of our audience, could you tell us a bit about your background and how you came to this realization that you were having these encounters with these non-human beings?
I went most of my life pretty much in the dark about it, even though I had quite a few symptoms of the classic abduction scenario. But I remember my first two incidents that happened in Southern Illinois. I was living real close to the Kentucky line, deep in Southern Illinois area, out on a farm, pretty much isolated from everything, you know, surrounded just by soybeans and cornfields and, you know, gravel road going up by the old farmhouse. And I was taken at that time. It happened in the fall, and they had shut off the, my parents had shut off the top part of the house. This old house had a stairway in the middle of the house that you could actually close the door to and shut it off and to save on the heating and stuff when it started getting cold. They moved my brother and myself and my sister downstairs. And my brother and I were actually sleeping on a pallet of quilts on the floor. And one night I heard a voice. I actually thought it was my stepdad calling me. It woke me up, and I raised up and looked around and didn't see anybody. But I kept hearing this voice coaxing me to come to the window. And, you know, I was just a curious little five-year-old kid, didn't have anything to be afraid of at that point. But I did notice a really bright light coming in the side window, and there was no street lights out there. I mean, we were isolated. We were out in the country, and it was very quiet, you know, just the ambient sounds of the night. And I just got up and started walking across the cold hardwood floor. And we had, instead of going to the window where the light was coming in, I actually went to the adjacent window for some reason. And we had these white wispy curtains. We didn't have any blinds. And I just raised my right hand up and pulled the curtains back. And that moment pretty much changed my life, because I came face to face with what we typically know now as gray, a small gray. I was standing just on the other side of the window. I had never been exposed to anything like that before. You know, I didn't have comic books. We just had an old black and white TV. I really wasn't even a kid that was even interested in cartoons or anything that much at that point in life. And so I didn't have any way to even process what I was seeing. Before I could scream or anything, I was gone. I did notice there was two of them standing back by the oak tree in the front yard about 10 or 12 feet back. So it was three of them all together. And the next thing I know, I'm waking up on a table surrounded by these strange creatures that I had no idea who they were or what they were or what they wanted. And I was in hysterics. I remember just crying for my mother, but she wasn't able to help me. And they must have pulled this image from my mind, but they turned themselves into doctors. They looked like doctors, you know, something that I had seen before, maybe thinking it would somehow calm me down. It didn't. It even confused me even more. But they eventually, most likely using mind control, but they eventually got me calm. I don't remember any kind of procedures or anything that they did to me at that point, but I do remember them escorting me to this area of what I now know as a craft. And there was a kind of a half moon seating area. It was all built into the craft. And there was these like blue cushiony type things on these seats. And there was several of the small grays sitting around this area. And there was one tall gray. And that was when, from the very first time that I was taken, I was introduced to the tall gray, who, in my opinion, are clearly the real aliens. They're the ones that's in charge of everything. You know, I think that the small grays are actually biological robots created by the tall grays, you know, to, as workers. I mean, all the small grays, they seem to have a hive mentality. They complete logic-based thinking. There's not a lot of communication with them. All the meaningful communication that you get comes from the tall gray. And they set me down by the tall gray, and he began to communicate telepathically, which of course at that time I had no idea why I was hearing his voice in my head. And I would speak out loud to him. And he was sort of like nice to me, you know, like as a small child, I was still just so scared. I didn't know what was going on. And I thought, well, at least this one's like being nice to me. And I think it was a psychological thing that they were doing. They had a plan that way. He sort of friended me, you know, he tried to friend me and tell me that they weren't going to hurt me and that I was his friend and all that kind of stuff like that. And that was all I really remember of the first time in that. They took me one other time at the farmhouse because I did go. They let me remember it the first two. I told my mom, hey, you know, these little gray guys come and got me. And I was telling her all about it. And she just dismissed it as imaginary friends, you know, that some kids make up and everything. And, you know, she had no reason to think anything else. And they start suppressing my memories after I had an experience where we were watching The Wizard of Oz, and my mom had told us kids, you know, all about it. And we were excited to see it. And we started watching, you know, gather around this little black and white TV, you know, and I was really enjoying it until it got to the scene with the flying monkeys. And it really upset me. And it must have just reminded me of the small grays. And, you know, they were taking Dorothy and Toto and everything. And I got really upset and I started crying. I ran out of the room. And my mom, she couldn't understand, you know, why I was so upset. And none of the other kids were or anything like that. And it was after that that all the memories, anything that happened to me during my childhood, I didn't remember any of it. Although I had like a lot of paranormal stuff start happening to me, which maybe we can, you know, get into that later, but you know, there's a direct correlation between the two. And that's what got me into the paranormal, because I was just getting haunted everywhere. My family eventually got into the oil business, and we had to move a lot, you know, wherever there was oil. And so it didn't matter where we were living. It seemed like I was just an attractant to any kind of paranormal activity, and I wanted to make it stop because I basically spent my childhood scared out of my mind because all this stuff was happening to me. And as I got older, I started researching and, you know, trying to learn more about it to make it stop. But other than that, and the chronic nosebleeds that the doctors couldn't explain, which of course now I attribute to nasal implants, but the only other thing that happened was when I was between my 13th and 14th year, I came down with a really mysterious illness, and the doctors couldn't figure out anything. I kept getting weaker, kept losing weight. They were going to put me in the hospital. It got so bad, but my family didn't have insurance at the time. And, you know, they were just like kind of on the borderline, like, should we leave him at home? Should we hospitalize him? And then I got so weak, I couldn't walk up the stairs anymore where my bedroom was at. So I started sleeping downstairs on the sofa. And it was during one of the weakest times, and right when they were going to have to take me to the hospital, that I remember having a dream, and I saw the grays again in this dream. And they told me that I was going to be okay. And I don't remember what was done to me or anything, but the next morning that I woke up, and I still remember, you know, this odd, to me at the time, was just an odd dream. And I remember my mom coming to check on me, and I said, well, I'm hungry. And I was barely eating at the time. And I said, can you make me some breakfast? And she was very surprised by that. And I actually got up and like walked into the kitchen and ate breakfast. And, you know, my appetite started coming back like right away. It was almost like miraculous healing. And the doctors couldn't figure out like how all of a sudden I got better, and my family couldn't figure it out. And it didn't take very long at all. And I was, you know, I was back to normal again. And then I was out playing basketball with some friends, and I came in and standing at the kitchen sink. And, you know, I like sometimes at least in basketball, like, you know, you do shirts and skins, you know. So it was one of those things. And I had my shirt off, and I came in to get a drink of water. I stand at the kitchen sink, and my mom walks into the kitchen, and she goes, what happened to your back? And I didn't know what she was talking about. And so I asked her, and she says, well, you have this big red mark all the way across your back, your lower back. And so I went in the mirror, you know, and trying to take another mirror and look in the mirror and to check it out. And it pretty much looked like a scar that was, you know, starting to scar and like trying to heal. And so we called the doctor and said, ask him about it, you know, should we come in? And I really wasn't in any pain or anything. And he says, well, it's probably just a stretch mark. And, you know, he's just some country doctor. And, you know, he's like, oh boy, that age is probably just a stretch mark or whatever. And so he didn't think anything about it, but it was probably related to whatever that they did to me that healed me. And I've since have two more scars across my spine. That was the only memory that I had, like, of anything. And I didn't tell anybody about it. You know, I just remembered, like, seeing the grays. And I still, even then, you know, that it wasn't really as dominant in our society as it is now, you know. And it wasn't until my early 20s when I started having severe panic attacks and anxiety issues and ended up in therapy. And I had been an athlete when I was younger. You know, I'd been out in public a lot with all kinds of sports. And even then, I was like a musician playing out all the time, doing shows. Not someone that's really would be prone to having anxiety attacks. And it got so bad, I mean, I got agoraphobic, meaning I didn't want to leave the house. And so I knew I had to get help, and ended up like starting to study meditation and getting heavily into meditation, and then going to therapy all the time. And that's when everything came flooding out. And I found out the real reason that I was having these anxiety issues.
Now, when you were younger, either before or after that first consciously remembered experience you had, did you ever go through a phase where you were having UFO dreams or having dreams of beings with big eyes, owls, that kind of thing? Because when I was younger, before I realized I was having ET experiences, I was having heaps of dreams about UFOs, UFO invasions, UFOs parking in our front yard. I mean, and the little frisbee-shaped silver gleaming disc flying all over the place and buzzing me by the head. And did anything like that happen with you?
Not really. The only thing I remember being I remember like being outside and like talking to my cousins and stuff, you know, and I was always like looking up at the sky and talking, you know, about, oh, there's got to be life up there, and wanting to look for UFOs and things like that. I was very attracted to that. You know, I was the kid in class that would, you know, get all the books on that kind of stuff, and also the paranormal, and everybody kind of thought I was a little odd because of it. And, but I was trying to get answers, you know, but I don't recall like having anything like that. You know, it all happened at once to me. Once I got into therapy, you know, it just sort of like, I think what happens in your subconscious mind, especially when you, what I call people that's been taken repeatedly, I call them lifers, because I sort of akin to a prison term. Because
yes.
I think, especially when it comes to the grays and maybe even the reptilians, and I actually think that they do work together at times.
Yes.
That, you know, if you have, especially with their hybrid program, If you happen to have the genetics that they're looking for, you're a lifer. You know, they're not going to let you go. And that's been the case with me. And one of the hardest things to accept and to get over in life is, like, once I did have all these memories surfacing, because what happens is a lot of, and this is a lot of people that I work with, you know, ever since the books came out, especially Children of the Greys. And now I put in the new book, The Baby Takers, I actually wrote about how I got to where I'm at now, which is a really good place. And in order to help other people that's not as far along in their journey as I am, because I've just had people from all over the world contact me. You know, it's such a large, widespread, and very complex phenomenon, but it's out there, and it's way bigger than most people, that the general public has no idea how big it actually is and how widespread that it is. And there's people, you know, I lived in Nashville for a long time, and there's a famous country star that's having experiences. You know, I won't say who it is, but everybody's so afraid to come out because there's still such a stigma associated with it. And, you know, I got to that point where I wanted to help people. And I knew that I had a lot of stuff, a lot of memories that it came through that people could probably relate to and know that they're not alone in this. And, but even with, when I had the breakthrough with the therapist, I did not tell the therapist. I mean, this is how strong of a hold this stuff has on an individual. I didn't even feel comfortable sharing it with my therapist because of the stigma that's attached to this. You know, everybody, the whole tinfoil hat, you know, delusional sleep paralysis, you know, all the stuff that's just absolutely absurd when you actually do take the time to like somebody like John Mack did, you know, that goes deeper with this and knows how involved that this is, and you can't just explain it away so easily. I waited over 20 years to come out with the first book, and I finally thought, you know, I'm not getting any younger, and I really need to get. It was for me as well, you know, like a healing process, because what happens often, and you've probably found this for yourself, you know, you experience PTSD syndrome.
Yes.
Very similar type thing. You know, there's a lady, Lifing Hargrove, that I wrote about it in the new book and talked about that. And she wrote a paper on it called PAS, you know, it's post-abduction syndrome. And it's very, very similar to what experiencers go through and have to deal with. Only the difference is, you know, most have to deal with it alone because there's really not a lot of help out there and not a lot of people to talk to. And I did the same thing. Like when it first started coming to me, I was, you know, you go through these stages, and I was, the first stage, you know, was denial. You know, I did not want what these memories that I was having, I did not want them to be true. And, but then I, you know, I was like, oh, this is starting to make sense now, you know, with the nosebleeds and the mysterious scars and the scoop marks and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I've did my best to take pictures and document everything on my body. And even in both books, you know, I got heavily into the sexual aspect of the abduction phenomenon, because it's another thing that's very, very seldom talked about, even though it's one of the most prominent things that goes on.
Yes, the ETs, some of them anyway, seem to have a vested interest in our reproductive system, in our genetics, and our sexual behavior. And they will even go to the trouble, seemingly, to affect us in a sexual way, to make us behave and act out in certain ways. Now, you touched on something earlier, and I'd like you to talk a bit about the sexual aspect later, if you'd like. But you mentioned something earlier about the paranormal, which followed you around, which is part and parcel of this experience. Because when I was younger, before I had a conceptual framework for what was going on, I just thought I was being haunted, because everywhere I went, I would have like strange things happen. Like the door would slam on me, and I used to have a deadlock on my door. I would hear it slide and lock itself, and I would have to like take the door off the hinges in order to get back in my bedroom. I'd have things missing and reappear in strange places that I know I'd searched. So it was almost as if I didn't know any better, whatever this power or this intelligence was, it was gradually, bit by bit, breaking down all these paradigms and all these logical dogmas that I had been indoctrinated with, until I realized, you know, this universe that we live in, it's a lot more fluid and dynamic than we think it is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you're describing very similar to the type of things that I went through. What I tried to do was to make it stop. For me, it was before I realized how it related to the abductions. Like you, I couldn't understand, like, no matter where I moved, this stuff would happen. It's almost across the board, the majority of people, abductees that I talk to, sometimes contactees, but definitely abductees, there's a couple things that happen. The more often a person has been taken, or the more times a person has been taken, it seems like that these things are more prominent. And one of them is what you just described, you know, is an increased paranormal activity. And the second thing is an increased and very enhanced psychic awareness, yes. I'll call it. Even for myself, you know, the word psychic is a little, such a derogatory term, because there's so many fakes out there, but there is also very, very real abilities that people have. And so I've found so many times, and I've talked to so many people and met people in person, that they will come back with some sort of enhanced psychic awareness, some kind of ability. And what happened with me, like I'm clairaudient and almost, you know, almost a medium. I mean, I hesitate to say that because I don't call myself a medium, but I've helped a lot of people with hauntings and over the years. And years ago, you would tell somebody, oh, I just heard somebody say blah, 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 and they might want to commit you. You know, luckily now we have technology that can document that, you know, and when I say somebody just said, you know, get out, then I can just pull up my little digital recorder and rewind it. And here you go, people, you know, here's what I just heard. And so people that work with me, I mean, they know now. And another thing that happens is a lot of empaths, a lot of people are very empathic that's had these experiences, and or energy healers, being able to sense energy or feel energy, you know, that's pretty prominent with me as well. And I used to reject these things because I thought that, well, sort of like what you know, like you're brought up a certain way religious wise, and everything in my family, everything was a demon, you know, and it's like, if yes. You were having these experiences, you know, you have demons, you know, it's a bad, bad thing. And so it was to the point where I would sort of just withdraw because I didn't want to be perceived that I was surrounded by demons and that kind of thing, or hearing them or trying to be tricked by them and everything like that, you know. So it's rough going through a childhood like that. And I tell people all the time, you know, if your kids are telling you these things, you know, yes, some kids have imaginary friends, and that's fine. But sometimes it goes a little deeper than that. And if they start drawing, you know, like I had a lady in Vegas, you know, that brought up, she had a little 7-year-old, and I went to one of their local UFO meetings there a couple times, and was talking to some people, and she had these drawings, you know, and I recognized the stuff from the drawings, and this kid had been taken. You know, I mean, she was drawing this stuff out. And so you could either be that, they're actually being taken, and then the results of that is the same thing that happened, it sounds like, to you as well, then the spirit contact. And actually, you know, at times we're not even sure of what it is, you know, that we're dealing with on these contacts. In my case, what I found, I've changed my whole view on it, you know, is that most of the people that I am contacted and I've had about every kind of paranormal experience that you could probably have. And I've been in every kind of haunted situation, everything, you know, from jails, old hospitals, plantation houses, I mean, you just name it. And what I've found is there's really nothing, the stuff that these reality ghost hunter shows, you know, and Hollywood and all this stuff. I mean, it's just, they make everything so dark and overreact and everything because that's what people want to, they want to be scared by this stuff. But what I found mostly is it's lost souls basically needing help. They're stuck in a middle dimension. They seek out those of us that they know can feel them, see them, hear them because they need help. And that's a sad reality of what I believe that most paranormal activity is.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, she's had our kind of ET experiences and has worked with many abductees over the years, but she also goes around clearing houses with her daughter. They go to places where families are reporting hauntings, for a lack of better term, and mm-hmm. they help the spirits of the departed that are stuck in this middle dimension, like you mentioned, help them move on. And they find that to be a very, very gratifying experience. Another thing that happened to me, Brett, was it was part of this gradual process where, you know, all these dogmas and these paradigms were being incrementally broken down. I started going through a phase of out-of-body experiences. And I realized later, after the fact, that the ETs were behind it, at least some of them. I'd hear a high-pitched tone in my head. I'd feel a slight sensation of heat, and then I'd be out of my body. But sometimes I wouldn't be aware I was out of my body. I would perceive myself to be laying in bed, restless, unable to sleep, but all along I was out of my body anyway. And then sometimes I'd get out of my body enough to like levitate around the bedroom and whatnot. And I realized that if I didn't stay out of my body at least a certain amount of certain length of time, and if I kept trying to go back in to my body, I'd never be able to do it, and it would be a long night. So I realized after a while that I just have to stay out here for a while, and then, you know, eventually I can go back to my body. And then later I realized that these ETs were behind it, and then they began astrally abducting me too. Did you ever go mm-hmm. through a phase where you were being taken out of your body astrally?
I've had a couple OBEs, and that's it. And that's a good question because, you know, a lot of people even think that every abduction is that. But I think there's too much physical evidence to the contrary, yes. Way too much. But I do think that it's done. I don't have any memories per se of knowing that was the case, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least bit. Because I think what we're dealing with, and one of the reasons, a theory that I brought up 4 years ago that's starting to kind of catch on now, and I was sort of scoffed at when I first came out with it, was the reason for the correlation between high paranormal activity among experiencers is because in the manner of which we're taken. And, you know, you'd hear people say, hey, I was floated up through the ceiling. I was floated through the wall and everything. And it used to really bother me. Like once I was aware of my experiences and stuff, and I was like, man, I can sometimes remember them here, like seeing them. And then I would just be instantaneously, I would be wherever they're taking me. You know, it's not always on a craft, by the way. And it really bothered me, like, you know, how are they doing this? You know, and why do I not have any kind of memories of like floating through the wall stuff? And then it was only about 6 or 7 years ago, and I was in Tennessee, and I was actually living on the Trail of Tears. I don't know if you're aware, yes. aware of that. And, you know, I'm part Native and Cherokee. And, you know, so it was kind of meaningful for me, you know, being on that. And oddly enough, the location where I was living, even though it was new, a newer building, was there was a lot of haunting stuff going on, and so it's sort of at times it goes through stronger periods than others, but it's sort of normal for me to have that kind of stuff, you know, contact and somebody just reaching out wanting me to help them, and. One night, and I write about this in Children of the Grays, but one night I'm laying on my side and facing the wall, and I hear this tap 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 sound like on the mattress, and it wakes me up, and you know, I'm sort of a light sleeper anyway because of I think these experiences sort of do that to a person after a while, you know.
Yes.
you get you don't ever really get deep full sleep, you know, but very rarely. And so it woke me up, but I kind of figured because of all the activity that had been happening at this place, you know, it was probably some sort of spirit activity. And so I laid there, still have my eyes closed, and I hear it again. And then I decide, well, you know, I'll open my eyes. Won't make any kind of movement. I don't know. You know, I didn't really expect to see like full body apparition or something, but you know, maybe I'll say something to them and see if I can help in any way or whatever. And when I opened my eyes, I really got a shock because I didn't see any kind of ghost or spirit, but I saw three small grays lined up beside the bed. And you know, normally they don't, that's not how they operate, you know, as far as the grays, you know, they don't want you to wake up. And so it was very strange to me that they purposely woke me up. But what I also saw was my bedroom wall was no longer there, and it was replaced by this oval shape. And around this oval shape was this like about 16 to 18 inches of sort of this white misty stuff. And through the shape, and it sort of looked like, I can only describe it like a water mirage, that type of, you know, wiggly kind of texture. But I could see through it, and I could see into a craft through this thing. And it was another gray standing back in the craft, like looking my direction. And so my first thought, I was actually married at the time, and my first thought was for them not to take her, because, you know, it's one of those things where you just don't really wish this on anybody, especially a family member. And I tried to speak, and I couldn't. They'd suppressed my ability to speak, and I was getting really, really angry about it. And I was trying and trying. And so I started, like, you know, in my head say, you know, please leave her alone. Don't take her. I started to say the word no, one syllable word. In the time that it took before I could even in my head, I'm screaming the word no. I was instantaneously on the craft, and then they no longer suppressed my speech. And the other part, the first in was in my head, and the O was out audibly that you could hear. So in that one syllable word, instantaneously, I was gone. And then I realized after that, I never did know if they took her at that time. I don't even have any other memories of what happened to me. But I think that they actually sort of did me a favor because, you know, they implant all of us and they monitor us all the time. And I write about that in Baby Takers. You know, that's one of my biggest fears that's left, you know, is the control that they have through these implants. And so, you know, they had to have known my thoughts on, you know, like, how are you taking me? And so I think they did that on purpose. I think they woke me up on purpose so that I would see this portal. And, you know, a lot of people think that it's, when I first came out with that, they were like, well, that's a little too much. But it's just because that our understanding of quantum physics right now is very elementary, and talking species in all these, whether whoever alien race that you're talking about are far, far superior to us in especially intelligence. And so they're obviously way more advanced. And just because we haven't mastered the ability to create these little mini wormholes and use them to travel doesn't mean that they haven't. And so it made sense to me that, like, well, this is why, you know, I could just say the same thing. They took me through my bedroom wall, you know, but really my bedroom wall wasn't there. It was replaced by this portal. I think that somehow going through these dimensional portals, it changes our vibrational rate of our chi. And we start vibrating closer to the spirit world. Because in my research, you know, I think that they vibrate at a faster rate than us, the frequencies elevated. And I think these experiences, when we're going through these portals, especially repeatedly, that it does something to us and changes us in that manner. And so for the spirit world to, we've become a beacon to them, in essence, you know, like they recognize the same sort of vibrational rate only on this plane of existence, you know, so they seek us out. And I think it also plays pretty heavily into why everybody's coming back with these enhanced abilities as well.
Yes, the experience definitely seems to enhance one's abilities, like whether it's, you know, astral travel, or I've always had the ability, well, you know, hasn't manifested itself lately, but I've for a long time was able to have precognitive dreams. So it manifests in different ways in different people. And to confirm what you just talked about, I've known of cases where somebody has woken up, and instead of just seeing ET standing there in their bedroom, what they saw was like what used to be one whole part of their bedroom has been replaced by like an ET control panel, and they're sitting there on these chairs and they're operating this like a navigation panel or something. Mm-hmm. And they barely took notice of him. It was just like he happened to wake up and they had somehow merged their world through technology with ours, right? And I spoke to another person. They said they had an experience where the bottom part of a craft passed through their ceiling and then a ramp descended and down comes this big, tall, blonde-haired guy, right? But they said that, you know, it was like one moment you're just in your own living room. Next thing you know, it's like an ET craft just parked and then like a ramp descends and they're just walking right into your living room. So, you know, the way I see it is if they can walk through a wall, and again, it goes back to the vibratory rates you talked about. One of the most important series of books I've ever read was the Andreessen Affair books, and then that segued into the Watchers books. And they told Betty Andreessen that, you know, like, referring to an object like a wall or a table, those objects are not really solid. They just have, and we know this now, you know, that everything just
it's
resonates.
Faster and slower moving molecules. That's all it is.
That's all it is. And they just seem to know how to, you know, pass through or otherwise, you know, manipulate the, you know, these substances, right? So, and I've gone through those scenarios where I was pulled through what I thought, you know, was a solid ceiling. But on one occasion, Brett, I woke up and I was above my bed and the white bed sheet was hanging down off me. And then I was like sliding along the ceiling of the room I was in. The thing about it was that room was an extension that my parents had built behind their house. So there was these large 2x4s, you know, at intervals along the ceiling, but I was sliding through these, past these 2x4s without bumping into them or anything. So it was almost, when I thought about it later, it was almost as if my density, my vibration was already being altered to mm-hmm. prepare me to being passed through this thing.
Yep. Yep. That all sounds exactly like what I'm talking about. And your precognitive stuff is, yes. is really very prominent. You know, I'm the same way. And I've met quite a few others as well. You know, it seems to be a pretty prominent trait.
It speaks to the fact that, you know, time as we understand it is not linear. It's fluid. It's like if we can dream about a future event before it happens and then it transpires exactly the way we dreamt about it sometime before and we're having a deja vu moment at the time saying, whoa, I dreamt about this whole scenario I'm living right now. I mean, that tells you right there where consciousness can go, matter can go, and time is not all it's cracked up to be.
Oh, yeah. Linear time is just something that's man-made. You know, even in the spirit world, you know, time doesn't exist. You know, the past, present, and future is all at once. You know, it's hard for us to wrap our heads around it. And I think the same thing, I've pondered this quite often because a lot of abductees, myself included, you know, one of the things like after an event, you'll be really, really tired when mm-hmm. you wake up the next day. I mean, like your body's made of lead type thing. And I've really wondered, like, because of the time, I think that they can also manipulate time as far as we know it. And what may seem like we're only gone for an hour or two in our concept of time is quite possibly a lot longer as far as our bodies. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like we might be gone a full 24 hours or something as biologically our biological clocks. And I think that's one of the reasons that when we come back that we're just drained and exhausted because we've really been gone, you know, for our bodies, our biological bodies a lot longer than our actual earth time. You know, if that makes any sense, but I think that, the thing is, it's like we really don't know whether these things are extraterrestrial or even ultra-terrestrial. You know, they could be dimensional beings as well. They could be extraterrestrials in another dimension. You know, I mean, it's like, but we do know that they have this ability to open these dimensional portals or whether they're just using them simply to travel with, or they're actually taking us into a complete other dimension where we remain the whole time that anything's done to us. I don't think anybody really knows that for sure. You know, we know that sometimes we're taken to Earth bases here, but sometimes, you know, I've really wondered, like on the crafts, like if we're really taken, if we're not in another alternate dimension at that time.
That's a very good question, because time does seem, at least sometimes, seems to pass differently on board the craft. And it's been suggested that when one is taken on board some of these craft, for all intents and purposes, you may be in another time stream. You may be another fabric of reality, another time continuum. And that may also be part of the problem, you know, besides the intentional memory swipes, why we sometimes have difficulty remembering these experiences, because our neurology would have been immersed in another place where it doesn't have any context as far as how to think, how to operate, how time passes. Then all this stuff is done to us, and then we're shunted back, you know, back in our beds. And, you know, we, like you said, you know, we feel like our bodies weigh a ton, and our bodies feel like lead. And here we are back in density again. It's a whole different ballgame.
Right. Yeah. I think there is something to that. You know, I don't think we've got it all figured out yet, but because we're so new, you know, to these dimensional aspects of this, you know, everybody just thinks, like, you know, some flying saucer comes and lands in a field and just grabs you and flies up by the moon or something, you know, and I think it's a little more complex than that.
In the time we got left in the first segment, Brett, I like your thoughts on the whole hybridization process, because much has been written and said over the years about this genetic hybridization program, where at least some of these grays or gray factions are obtaining DNA from us abductees by hook and crook, and they seem to be creating this hybrid species that's half them, half us. I'd like your thoughts on that from a personal perspective, and where do you think that these ETs are going with this, and how this it's a big question, multi-part question, and how this impacts us? Because there's one school of thought that says, look, they're going to end up replacing all us with these hybrids one of these days if this program is left unchecked.
The David Jacobs thought?
Yes.
I think if they were going to do that, they would have already done that. It would be very easy for them, because the mind control capabilities of the grays is pretty much incomprehensible to us. I tell people this over and over, you know, like, we are completely defenseless against them, no matter how many bombs and tanks and missiles and everything, you know, it doesn't matter, because when you control somebody's mind, and you control everything. And I think that's a very frightening aspect of this. And because of that, if they were going to take over this planet, they've had multiple opportunities to do so. But on the other hand, they are definitely creating a mass hybridization program. And it's been going on for quite a while. They're interested in us, I believe, as a physical specimen, and that's it, because they're very, very frail, very fragile. And part of the problem that they're having is the emotions that these hybrids that they're creating are exhibiting, because they're pretty much, as would be a natural thing, I mean, they're not wired like we are. They're getting these hybrids that exhibit these certain human emotions. Because they're part of us, they don't understand it, because they don't have them, and they're very stoic. They're very emotional. I used to really blame them a lot for the things that they did to me. Through the past few years, I've changed on that, because, you know, they seem, there's a certain sense of desperation in what the grays are doing.
Yes, absolutely.
Especially, and I think that, I mean, look at us, so what we do, you know, just to the cruelty we do to animals, you know, just so we have better cosmetics or, you know, stuff like that. I mean, the stuff that we do to other species on this planet is horrendous. And so the things that they do, I think they do out of necessity, and maybe they don't really mean to hurt us as much as they do. You know, the physical stuff you heal from, it's the mental stuff, I think, is the hardest to get over. And I think that they have to do that because they're trying to understand, they're creating this large race of a species that they don't understand. And so they put you through a lot of mental type scenarios just so they will elicit a certain response. And even with the sexual stuff, you know, it's not so much, they've got our reproductive system figured out, but they don't understand the emotional aspects of human sex. And so, you know, I've even been in experiments like that, you know, where they've had a room full of people. It's really mind-blowing, because in the new book, I interview four other lifers, lifelong abductees, and I knew one of them, but I never knew the other three. And they contact me after Children of the Grays come out, and the congruencies between the cases, it's absolutely mind-blowing. Anybody that reads this stuff, I mean, their jaw's just going to drop. And one of the things that happened was these sexual experiments, which goes back to the hybrid program, because they're obviously, the hybrids are going to breed, and probably already are, but they're probably finding out that, hey, it's more than just a biological act of, you know, propagating a race, you know, what are these other things that's happening? You know, what are these neurons triggering, you know, during this act that the hybrids are experiencing? You know, we have to find this stuff out, and, you know, why are they, these certain feelings happening? And so they subject you to a lot of mental stuff. And one of the remarkable things that happened was I wrote about this experience in Children of the Grays, but, you know, I was taken one time sometimes you'll see other humans, but this case was a lot of them, a lot of other people. And they took me, and I was nude. A lot of times, you know, they will just prounce you around like that. You actually start to be used to it, you know, because you're just a subject to them. And other times they will dress you, but this time I was nude, and I was escorted by a couple small grays into this large half dome room, and there was a ramp. And I found in the crafts that, you know, everything's sort of built into the craft, and everything has rounded edges. They don't like stairs. There's a lot of ramps, and there was a ramp up the side of this room, and the end were like these large built-in seating area, and there was some tall grays sitting up there, and there was some small grays standing in back of them. And on the floor were like these blue sort of mat cot things, and they were all evenly spaced out, and there was all these male and female humans engaged in sexual acts on each one of these cots. And I had no idea like what was going on. I'd never experienced anything like this before. I had no idea what was about to happen. And as I walked up this ramp, I passed this room on my side, left side, and I glance in, and the room is full of nude males. They're packed in there like a busy subway car, and everybody seemed to be sort of, I described like a zombie state, you know, just sort of like there, but not there, you know, conscious, but sort of like not there. And they didn't even seem aware that they were all jammed in there like that. And there was a small little bench thing, and a few guys were sitting there, and everybody else was just standing there very, very zombie-like. And I thought, well, why am I don't think I'm like this, you know, I don't think I'm like feeling like I seem to be very coherent. And not very much further up this little ramp, there was another room, and I looked in that, and it was full of females, same exact way. And they took me to the front, the tall grays acknowledged me, and then there was a few stairs going down to this area, and then they took me down, and they matched me up with like some woman who I had no idea who it even was. And, you know, they want you to engage in sex. And it's something that it really feels like rape, and it's something that you can't control, even if you don't, which I'm sure nobody wanted to, but everybody seemed to be unaware of everybody else. And to me, everybody seemed in like this sort of like zoned out zombie-like state. And so after the book came out, like I talked about that, and this lady contacted me, and she says, I had the exact same experience. Now, I've never heard about any kind of experience like that anywhere. And but I wanted to put it in the book because I didn't want to hold anything back. You know, I was like, I know this sounds pretty crazy. You know, like it sounds like some kind of wild orgy or something. It was far from that. It was definitely some kind of experiment. And nobody was a willing participant. And this lady, you know, I was a little suspicious. And I was like, well, maybe, you know, she just read that and she's just saying it or whatever. And she says, well, I have proof, you know, that I told somebody this, you know, before your book even came out. And so she says, I've been in therapy. And she told me, you know, I won't say who she is or anything, but she's in the new book, her story. And her story is a remarkable story. And this is just one small part of it, but she told me who her therapist was. And it was somebody that I actually knew. And she says, I did drawings and I'd like to send them to you. And you can verify this, you know. And she told me the therapist's name, and she goes, I'll give her permission to talk to you. You know, so I was able to validate what she said, and I got the drawings, and sure enough, you know, she had told this therapist this in complete confidence before my book even came out. So I knew that she had this experience also. And she sent me these drawings, and she described, and in Baby Takers, I go into real great detail about this, but basically the same scenario that I just described to you, all the way down to the people being in like a zombie-like state. And she wondered the same thing I did, that do I appear in this same sort of state to the others in this room, even though in my mind I seemed like I was very coherent and aware of what was going on. You know, is this the kind of mind control that they're doing on us? You know, because she said this, she thought the same thing. You know, she says, why is everybody in this sort of zoned out frame of mind and doing this stuff? And she, in her drawing, she even drew blue mats, blue cot like things.
Uh-huh. We'll go over, if it's okay, by a couple of minutes in this first segment, because there's a couple of points I want to bring up, because we're just getting started, folks, and we got a whole other segment after this. But I've been in those scenarios too, and what I remember, and of course your perceptions are altered and your consciousness is kind of muted, and I've been described by many people who've seen me in one experience or another as looking zombied out, so I know the zombied out bit. Mm-hmm. But what happened was I had been paired up with this gal, and I worked at this place in San Diego in Del Mar. It was North County, San Diego, up Highway 5. It was a four-story building, and there was this gal that worked in one of the other companies there, right? I didn't know her personally. We would just see each other, you know, taking the elevator up or, you know, pass each other in the lobbies. Didn't think nothing of it. And then in this experience I had where it was like a large group orgy scene, which Candy Turner, Carla Turner, and Barbara Bartlett talked about also. And in this scenario, I was paired up with this particular gal. And it was, a lot of it I found was, it was almost, the sex was almost like an autonomous response. It was almost like we were acting out in ways that, you know, we were just kind of programmed to act out. And there was indeed like a gallery section where we were being watched, and this has been described by others too. And so, long story short, the next morning I'm on the elevator going up to my floor where I worked for a telecom company at the time, and this same gal happens to be on the elevator. And I felt so bad about it later, you know, when I had time to think about it. But the moment we saw each other, we had that instant recognition, and she immediately kind of moved herself to the corner of the elevator. It was a small elevator, and she covered up her private. She kind of squinched up into a corner like she felt that she'd been, you know, violated, right?
Right.
And then, yeah, you know, then the doors open, I step out, and I'm just feeling like a turd all day long, you know what I mean? Because to me, it was just, I don't know, some kind of weird erotic dream. And then next thing you know, the very next day, here I am with this gal. We have the instant recognition, and then she acts, and rightly so, feels as if she's been violated, but it was only because these ETs had put us together in this scenario. And it must be understood, folks, it's like we don't go to bed saying, well, I hope the ETs, you know, use me in one of these sexual scenarios. That much being said, I have come across the odd abductee, male or female, who claimed to have had, you know, some degree of conscious awareness where they welcomed these sexual manipulations, where one woman told me, and she's since passed away, but she told me that, you know, they would lay out all these males for her on the floor, and she said some were aroused enough to be able to take part in a sex act, and some weren't, right? And then I was told by one guy named Joseph, right? He was being paired up in an alien love bite scenario with a good friend of mine at the time. And they were being put together either on board a ship or at an alien installation sexually. And, you know, they were both consciously aware of this. And to kind of prove what he was saying to her, he pointed out a beauty mark in a concealed part of her body, you know, that normally is, you know, hidden beneath clothes, should not have known about. And my friend, the gal, she was already in a committed relationship at the time. So, you know, there were those dynamics, and you know, you have issues of guilt and shame and all this other stuff. It gets very deep. And thank you so much for sharing this.
We can't, you know, an Eve Lorgan and an alien love bite, I mean, she's definitely on to something with that. You know, I actually told her in Baby Takers, you know, because I think that does play into stuff because they have, if they want to match up a certain DNA, say it sort of gets watered down after a few generations, you know, they bring somebody back into the picture, you know, to keep it where they want it. I do think that they have that and use that ability. The sexual stuff, I think everybody feels a little bit of, even the males, you know, I think you feel like you've been raped, you know, even when they extract semen, you know, but it's something that everybody has to sort of get over, because it's not like in the rare case, like you talked about, you know, somebody volunteered. Normally that's not the case.
Yeah. And, normally it's very involuntary.
The lady I was just telling you about, she actually recognized somebody that she knew, and she said she kept trying to talk to him, and he was just like looking up over her head, you know, like he, you know, she kept saying, why are you doing this? Why don't you do this? But then she realized that, you know, and to all of us, you know, we're not the ones in control. And that's what everybody has to understand.
Yes.
When this kind of stuff happens, you know, a means to an end for the Greys anyway, you know, because it all goes back to them examining the psychological aspects of the act itself. You know, I think that plays really heavily into it. You know, I think there's other sexual experiences, you know, when they are trying to impregnate hybrids and things like that. The only thing I could figure out on these big group things was they were just monitoring the emotional responses.
Yeah, and in the second half, we'll talk a bit more about the emotional responses, because many of us were subjected to that. I know I was, and sometimes, boy, they'll get their money's worth as far as wringing, you know, emotions out of you, one sort or another. Anyhow, we've reached the end of the first half of the Cosmic Switchboard Show. You've been listening to our very special guest, Brett Oldham. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next hour.